Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, just a quick message here before we hop into today's question and answer episode. Tomorrow is day one of the 7-day fasting ramp up challenge, January 12th. It is the launch of the challenges for the 2022 calendar year. We are super excited. Dare I say it is going to be the best challenge yet. Today's episode focuses on some of the questions that we get in between the challenges and during the challenges that could really shed some light on getting you the answers that you need in real time. So Tommy, as reflecting back on 2021 and the amazing results of, you know, average of 8 pounds lost and breakthroughs and plateaus demolished and maintenance reached, the focus on the Q&A sessions during the 7 days is really what we feel moves the needle.
Yeah, it's been incredible because, you know, it doesn't really matter where you're coming to fasting or like where you are in your fasting journey. If you're a beginner or you're more advanced, there's going to be questions all along the way. And those questions, they change throughout your journey. So being able to get answers to those, especially as you're going through something that's pushing you to new heights. Like maybe it's now your new longest fast, or maybe you just push through a long-term weight loss plateau, or maybe now you understand what you're dealing with every time you go to actually break your fast. And maybe there's some emotional connections that keep coming up, some patterns, right? But understanding what those look like in real time, especially while we're going through the science and the psychology of it, again, in real time, every single day, that can be the difference between, you know, kind of stagnating or plateauing versus breaking through that and getting to the next step. And that's what the challenge is all about.
Absolutely. And focusing on those Q&As every single day, you get the replays, you get the videos, you get the audios, you can take them with you on your walks. We are there with you every step of the way. It is a vow that we think we've kept our promise to, which is we answer every single question during those 7 days and give you the support that you need. So the action step for today's intro to today's question and answer episode is go get signed up for the challenge. It starts tomorrow. Don't miss out. You can go to the show notes or www.thefastingforlife.com/live. And now on to today's episode. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here, as always, with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. Today, we're going to do a listener Q&A. I'm not sure if it's the holidays or the most recent challenge or what is happening, but man, the contact us is the info at questions, the messages on Facebook, in the Fasting for Life community group. There's just been a ton of questions. So we're going to pick out some of the ones that we feel, or we have picked out some of the ones that we feel can be impactful and we've seen repeats on. So today is going to be a listener Q&A. And as you know, growing up, going through school, there was always, there is no question is a bad question. So if you guys have questions, feel free to reach out to us, info@thefastingforlife.com. If you're new to the podcast, you can head to the website, thefastingforlife.com. We have a free fast start guide. It's a simple 6-step PDF to put one meal a day fasting into your day-to-day life. And it is the thing that we first originally created and is still going strong, getting people results. So, Tommy, what question do you want to start with today, sir? I'm going to pong it over to you because I know we have our list and I typically will be the governor here. But where do you want to start?
I think we should start with breaking the fast. There can be a lot of points of concern or points of confusion that maybe we can lend a little clarity on about breaking a fast.
So frame out what, because this came from a conversation between two people in our group. And I think it was a good perspective, but frame out what the construct was and what the actual question was, or the concern, I should say, with breaking a fast.
Yeah, it's like going into the fast and then having some fear around the actual breaking. Like, when will I? How will I do it? I have some concerns about my own eating behavior, my own eating patterns. And she said, it can be hard to break the fast sometimes. Often I'm afraid if I start eating, I won't stop. Or I'll want to see a fasting time like a new PR, a new personal record, or a new best time, or one that, you know, beats somebody else in the group or one of my friends. And you know, just not knowing exactly what you're going to do, kind of having that clarity of what the purpose of the fast was, and that confidence that during your actual eating window, you're going to do what's serving you and serving your goals, and having a plan going in and then executing on that plan.
Yeah, so a couple layers there, which is why I really like the question and the conversation. So breaking a fast for addressing the concern of always having to or wanting to climb Mount Everest every time, mm-hmm. meaning like you've hit the PR. All right, I did it. Now I did 24 hours. Now I want to do 26. I did 26. I want to do 28. I did 28. I want to do 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, somebody in the group's doing a 5-day fast. Oh, well, I want to do a 7, right? So I hear a little bit of competitiveness, and that reminds me of my loving wife, Megan,
yeah.
Where she has that competitive edge where for me, I'm like, I don't care. You can win. It's fine. Right. Like, I don't have that, you know, competitive, like with certain things, but not in everything, right? Where,
right.
where she might be a little bit more competitive in everything.
Maybe.
Maybe. maybe. This is just, I don't know who said it. Wasn't me. But, with that, I feel that we may be setting the expectations of what we're expecting of our fasting lifestyle a little bit too high. Mm. So the idea with fasting is not to create this restrictive kind of competitive environment where it's like, oh, I gotta break it next time. It's really being strategic with using different varying fasting windows or fast cycling to use time 72 hours and less, because we get the protective metabolism protection there. We get our protection of our resting metabolic rate. We're going to talk about that in a minute about from another question that came in from a listener. Mm-hmm. But it always goes back to me is there's conviction and clarity. So going back to what is my plan for the week, and is this plan moving me closer or farther away from my goal? So it sounds like to me, if you're always wanting to just push it the next time, really yeah. making sure that you have a plan that you can commit to ahead of time and removing that decision to have an open-ended fast.
Yeah. Yeah. That open-ended fast, that can be a slippery slope. But what you just said there about kind of like having that plan for what you're going to be doing with that fast. Like if you think about it, you can't just endlessly hit new longer fast. I mean, I guess technically like you could for a long time, but would you really want to? Is it serving you and your psychology and your physiology and your goals the best? Or could it be potentially setting yourself up for losses, like for misstarts and for failure or failed timer hits that add up over time, where you say, okay, I really want to hit a new PR this time. And my longest fast before was a 36 hour fast. I really want to do something beyond that. And then, so if you keep pushing it and you're not hitting the end goal that you set out for yourself, that's a mark against you. Right. And those things, we remember those things, they start to wire together. And then if we're consistently not hitting the goal that we actually set out for, then we get into a bad pattern, and that's going to lead to, you know, negative results, not getting farther towards our goals.
Yeah. The one other layered thing here too, is where it was the concern about, if I start eating, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to stop. So
yeah.
That's a different conversation, and it can feed into that feeling of always wanting to push. So what we really encourage most people to do is to stick to the plan, right? So use the varying windows based on your life and your schedule. So if you have a date night, you have a dinner, you have, say your son's away at college or your daughter's coming home, or you have a holiday gathering, really just putting the boundaries around what it is that you value with the fasting lifestyle. So allowing it to give you the confidence to be able to know that you can do this repeatedly over time with sustainability, and moving away from that, you know, the dieting framework, right? Where we're adapting this into a list. Because when you get to a maintenance point and, you know, you're not in fat loss phase, right? You're in a maintenance phase. Being able to know that you have confidence around your meals or your eating windows is a key component of that. And the only way maintenance is ever going to work out and stick is if you get the repetitions and the practice of building those habits and those routines.
Yeah, good point. And when she says there, I'm afraid if I start eating, I won't stop, that reminds me of my own former habits with like a revolving pantry door, because if it feels like a slippery slope whenever you go to break your fast, then there might be some things that you need to put some other control points on. Like for me, that meant not buying certain snacks at the grocery store, just like not keeping them in the house. Or if I'm sitting down for a meal, like sitting down for a meal rather than an eating window. Like, so if you find yourself going down slippery slope every time you break your fast, consider it a meal rather than an eating window, even like
one meal a day,
one meal a day. Okay. Emphasis on meal there rather than even like what we've heard it like a 30-minute eating window or a 60-minute eating window, or maybe even like a 90 or a 2-hour eating window, but treating it like a meal rather than a window. Cause a window can bring about you know, a lot of behaviors that don't serve us. Those are like old behaviors that went along with gaining weight, not with gaining control. Right.
Right. And the intentionality behind that meal too, make sure that you are putting things in that you enjoy and making sure that you're eating to satiation, make sure you have good sources of protein, nutrients, dense foods, et cetera, is really part of that equation as well. It's not a simple one, you know, one size fits all answer for a lot of people, but it's something that you need to get those repetitions in to build that long term. So great conversation, great question there. I want to move into a straightforward question, which is, why do I sometimes get cramps in my feet and hands? And is this related to intermittent fasting? So my first question would be, did you get cramps prior to fasting, right? If you've been fasting for years, or is this something new? And if it is something new, a couple of considerations. If you've extended your fasting windows, maybe the weather has changed and you're indoors with heat more and you're getting a little bit more dehydrated. Maybe really the answer to this one typically comes down to hydration and electrolytes. So if this is you and this person, this question came in from Joanne, one of our listeners, and it would be a lot of people, you know, when they see cramps, you can get on the web and you can go down Dr. Google, and magnesium comes up a lot as the answer. Magnesium sometimes can make cramping worse. So what I would really start first is hydration. And my mom's story, she called me one day, "Hey, honey, I'm getting this, you know, I don't understand. And I had a banana and I did this and I tried magnesium and it didn't work. It made it worse." And I was like, right, it's hydration. So increase your water intake. If you're already doing a substantial 75 to 90 ounces of water a day, right? Half your body weight in water, add 1 teaspoon of Himalayan or Redmond sea salt, or a good source of a good sea salt, right? Doesn't matter which one. Add a teaspoon in the morning into 16 to 30 ounces of water. And then a teaspoon, this is the key one, late afternoon, early evening. And do that for a couple of days and see if it improves. And then the second thing you can do to add in before bed would be like an Epsom, a warm Epsom salt bath, which can help. Again, salt. And then if you're having more of like a sleeping issue with cramps, then I would try something like a magnesium-based product like Calm or a magnesium supplement. But start with hydration first, because that's typically the driving factor before we get into the supplementation stuff.
Yeah, I think that's great perspective. I know for me personally, I used to have a lot more cramps, and mostly like in my hands, like in my thumbs and in my feet, just kind of sporadically before implementing a fasting lifestyle. It's like I was able to find more of probably the electrolyte and hydration balance was easier as the weight came off, and then as I got consistent with my fasting as well.
Yeah, when I was, and one thing, interestingly enough, when I was, this also applies to headaches too, the hydration thing.
Yeah.
When I was in full-time clinical practice and the seasons would change and we would go from hot, humid Houston to cool, palm trees are dying, sprinklers are freezing, mm-hmm. and power's being lost for days on end, the great ice and snow apocalypse we had last year.
Right.
The heat turns on and heat is dry. And you're typically used to a certain amount of water in the air down here in Houston. So if you're inside and the heat turns on, people would come and be like, "Ah, doc, my headache's kicked up." And I'd be like, "Yeah, you're dehydrated." They're like, "No, I drink water." I'm like, "Okay, you're wearing sweaters, you're wearing jackets. The air is drier. You're inside. It's dry heat." I was like, literally, just increase your water, add a little bit of salt, and boom, headaches go away. So similar mechanism there, but it just reminded me of that when we're sitting here talking about it. So, go ahead, Tommy.
Oh yeah, no, I was, I'm looking at the next question here, and I think this is going to be a good one because there's a few different layers in here. And I know, a lot of us come to fasting with some concerns, like is fasting actually different from like a low calorie diet or from something else that I've tried in the past? So we got a question here, and it's how is intermittent fasting different than a reduced calorie diet? And do we need to consume X number of calories to keep our metabolism going? And, you know, like, and maybe my spouse is concerned about those calories too, because this is like new ground, and my spouse, you know, doesn't want me to do anything that's, you know, bad for me. Right.
Hey, fasting fam, want to let you know about an incredible company that we've partnered with, aquatrue.com. Promo code fasting for life to receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. These are not your old school pitcher filters or your refrigerator filters. We're talking about a proprietary 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process. Their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing, which if you've priced those whole home water filtration systems, you know exactly what I'm talking about. These incredible countertop versions, they do have one under sink mounting model as well, but they remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, like I mentioned, and they're specifically designed to combat this new group of chemicals that the Environmental Working Group has done a deep dive on, these forever chemicals called PFAS or PFASs. These are in 45% of our U.S. tap water, 45%. These things can lead to endocrine system disruption, certain types of cancers, liver toxicity. And I'm so glad that there's now a countertop affordable version of this incredible technology. So as we fast, we know that water, outside of a little black coffee and tea, is the only thing that we drink. So if we're trying to get the biggest bang for our buck, we're trying to increase autophagy and allow our bodies to heal, shed the weight, get healthy, reverse disease, then why not give it the absolute best quality water that you can. So AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. It even makes a great gift, like I mentioned, my aunt and uncle. Today, as one of our loyal listeners, if you support them, you're supporting us. You're going to get 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com. That's AquaTru.com and enter code fasting for life, FASTINGFORLIFE. That's 20% off any of the AquaTrue water purifiers at aquatrue.com.
Yeah, the starvation mode, maybe it doesn't seem like you're eating enough to survive, right? So there's three things here. One is the CECO, the calorie in, calorie out versus the carb insulin model of obesity, or the insulin model of obesity. And then you've got the old construct, right? Of like, should I be tracking my calories and macros here? Am I crashing my metabolism? Mm-hmm. And then the marriage merge, which is something that we talk about often, where you may not have the spouse, partner, friend, family member might be being like, are you sure this is okay for you? Like, I'm a little worried that you might not be eating enough. So I want to start with the calorie in, calorie out question. And the two main models of weight gain or weight management or fat loss or however you want to word it. The calorie in, calorie out model, comparing it to the carb insulin model of obesity, is not, they can't be separated. They are related. Mm-hmm. And when we're looking at the question of, you know, how is intermittent fasting different than just being on a caloric restriction?
it all comes down to, because fasting inherently is a caloric restriction, right? Mm-hmm. But the difference is, if we could visually imagine a blank piece of white paper and you draw two lines, like half a square, right? And on that bottom line across the bottom, you're going to put time. And on that the line going vertically up the side of the paper, you're going to put insulin. And just envision it, if you took a marker and you drew this wavy line, so every time you ate, the line would go up, and then it would slowly start to come down. And then you'd have a snack and it would go up and then come down, start to come down. And then you'd eat lunch and it would go up, so on and so forth. So you would have 6 to 8 of those spikes, you know, a day. And all of that time that is under that line that you drew, right? All of that time across the bottom of that page, imagine coloring it in, right? Like with a dark marker.
Right.
That is all time while your body is in a fed state and you're not tapping into the switch that controls fat burning, which is insulin. It's the hormone that controls fat storage versus fat burning. If you envision that same scenario, except with a one meal a day, or let's say a 2-hour eating window, or let's say you have some appetizers, a meal and a glass of wine. So you're at a dinner event for 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
You have very tiny little spikes or blips throughout the day, right? Where insulin is low and it stays low. Sometimes it'll actually go down, and then you eat, it goes up, and there's one spike then, or one area underneath that curve that you would shade in. That area under that curve is much less than the first example. So the time that your body is in a fed state is much less. And that is the main difference. We are not just using the calories, and we could have the same amount of calories consumed across the entire day or just in that 1 to 2 hour window. I'm not saying to recommend to do that. We'll talk about that number in a second, which is the second question. But that's the difference, is we are allowing our body to tap into those stored energy and calories, which taps into the third question, which is, what about my husband's concern? Well, if you've got 20 pounds to lose, you have 70,000 stored calories of energy on your body. So it'd be like, hubby, I'm good. Like when I told my wife in the beginning, like, you're not going to eat today? No, I'm good. Look at me. I got 40 pounds of visceral fat around my midsection.
Right.
I got plenty of stuff, right? Winter isn't coming. I'm good. So I want to land the plane on the first one first, Tommy, the difference of why fasting is different, because it protects your resting metabolic rate. It increases your noradrenaline, and it keeps that time under the curve where insulin is high, low.
Yeah, we are really doing something different. Like you said, even if you take in the same number of calories, but it's in that time restricted manner, and you get the huge benefit of keeping the insulin levels low and getting less time underneath that curve. And that's where the reversal process,
yes,
the healing process takes place, right? Like, that's when I get to start undoing all of those times when I had those meals that had a few extra calories each time I did it, and they were a little bit more processed carbohydrates. It was a little bit more, I saw the scale just ticking up slowly over time. Well, something was happening to do that. Like, my body was, overall, I was spending more time in fat storage mode. So if I want to undo that and basically act like I have a time machine and I can go back in time, then this is how we do it. We control the insulin now by making these choices.
And that is huge in terms of the reversal process. So especially so if we're looking at the insulin model of obesity versus the calorie in, calorie out model, that's like, we're talking about the resistance portion, right? The 20 pounds that you just can't lose, or the same 20 you've been losing, or now it used to be 20, now it's 30, now it's 40, et cetera.
Yep. That was me.
So yeah, same here. So you are tapping into the reversal, which I love, is that you're getting your numbers to a point. We just had an example pop up in one of our groups where a woman was like, I did it. I've never seen my numbers in the 70s before. And she was having pre-diabetic numbers, and she got there by being consistent and sticking with allowing the hormones of insulin and the hunger hormones, leptin and ghrelin and all that stuff, help to balance out over time and remove that time under the curve where your body was in fat storage mode. So,
you know what the best part of that was when she shared that with us, was the fact that she wasn't at her lowest overall weight.
Yes.
But her blood sugar, insulin, and ketone numbers were at a much better point than
the last time.
yes, they were at a healthier point than the last time that she had been at a lower weight than that. And that part blew my mind. That was awesome.
Yep. It was incredible when she shared that. I had just forgotten about that. Great point. That leads into the second question. the second part of this question, do we need to consume an X amount of calories to keep our metabolism going? So fasting has that incredible ability to, some of the research has showed that it actually will boost your metabolism by 14% within the, 72 to 84 hour mark, right? So we don't recommend a lot of 72 hour fast back to back to back, right? We want this to be a lifestyle. So we're talking about 18 all the way up to 48s, sometimes 50s, depending on if you're trying to break through a plateau, and then making sure that we're filling our eating window with nutrient dense, healthy foods, giving our body the opportunity to balance over time, right? So
yeah,
to keep it really simple, if you are worried about it, you can simply track the calories and shoot for that 40 to 60% mark of what your BMR is on a daily basis. And that will be more than enough to make sure that you are getting that protective mechanism by no adrenaline going up and giving your resting metabolic rate the stimulation it needs to continue. Mm-hmm. And that varying of the windows allows your body also to balance. So 40 to 60%, if you want to track to make yourself feel better about it and make sure that you're on track. And if you're ever feeling like tired or just the cravings have kicked up, increase your protein and your fat intake for a mm-hmm. few days, increase your window a little bit, and that should really help you kind of push through.
Yeah. If you're feeling like that and you took a couple of days, just to like you said, like open up your window and maybe just, switch back to 16.8 or to 18.6 for a couple of days and then, and then jump back in, like no issue with doing that at all. And I think that 40 to 60%, what you just described there, what I heard was basically almost treating it like you were at a two meal a day, like long-term, if you were doing two meals a day. Like I just nixed breakfast. Like breakfast doesn't exist. Like if my kids ask me what's breakfast, I tell them, well, breakfast is the opportunity for kids to eat, for growing kids to eat.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm not growing. I don't need it. I don't need a third main eating opportunity for the day. So if you thought about it, like you were going to break your day up into two main meals, then just eating that like you would at your maintenance point will help you kind of like develop the good habits that are going to sustain you long-term, as well as kind of optimizing during your eating window.
Yeah, it was really cool that we picked, well, I love that we picked this group of questions because there's so much overlap, because mm-hmm. we just talked about, the fear of the, well, I never know when if I'm going to break my fast, or am I going to be able to stop once I open my eating window? Well, we've given you tips on that too, but like there's that part of beginning with the end in mind. What does the end look like? Mm-hmm. When you lose the weight, what does that look like? People don't tend to think about that. Or if they're so far from it, it's overwhelming and then they don't start. So
yes.
I love that there's overlap in here for a lot of these questions that have come in, and they're grouped together, intentionally as well. The last part of this question, this three-parter, the question about, am I making sure that I'm keeping my metabolism going and not entering air quotes starvation mode? The last question, was inspired by the husband's concern or the spouse's concern, because it goes both ways. And this is in situation, it is a woman who asked the question, am I eating? He doesn't think I'm eating enough. Well, and he's worried, and that's completely justifiable. So my perspective on this would be, okay, have you been getting results? If you've been getting results, focusing on your end goal and communicating that, saying, I want to lose this 20 pounds because I want to be healthier for my grandkids. I want to be able to spend more time with you and feel better and sleep better. And if you're getting results, simply sharing that you have confidence that this is a long-term sustainable plan for you should be enough to what we call kind of get that marriage merge to come in. And it's tough when that person is not doing what you're doing, and they're not doing it. And maybe they are, but they're not doing it for the same reasons.
Right.
So, just being encouraging that if you do what we just talked about, then you are okay. And just relaying that information.
For my own household, when I got started, my wife was concerned for sure. She was like, well, that sounds extreme. It sounds like it might be dangerous. Are you sure? I don't even think she asked me if I was sure whenever I first started. It was more like, why would you do that? That doesn't sound good. And it was like, well, okay, I've been trying all these other things for so long. let's do this. I just want a little bit of support. Don't be too concerned. If I don't feel well, then I'll eat something. Okay. But
right.
I've been eating a lot of things for a long time. So let me do something a little bit different and see how this goes. And so then just over the first few days of like, okay, well, let me just check in with you. Let me tell you how I'm feeling and how I was feeling last week. So I'm kind of contrasting now within the beginning of this fasting thing, how I'm feeling versus whenever I was doing things the old way. And then it didn't take long to go like, well, obviously you're making some choices that your body seems to be responding to better. You feel better. And then that starts to give some reassurance to your spouse. And it didn't take long before she said, okay, well, maybe I should do a little bit of this too, and kind of start dipping your toes in the water. And then you have a really cool process of like support, encouragement, feedback, like built into, you know, your marriage or your home life. It's right. A really cool thing to start to get that marriage merge.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, man, you guys, from when we first met, you look a little different.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The keyword is little. So, thank you. Yeah. And that's pot calling the kettle. I'm sure. There. So,
yeah.
Last question as we wrap up today's Q&A, came in, and I love this because this is a question we get often. And for you more emotional folk out there that don't really like data or tracking or numbers, you may not like this portion, but there is some power in potentially needing this tool at some point. So, we had talked about this, and then a follow-up question would be, well, if I'm getting results, do I need to use this or like a Keto Mojo or a blood sugar ketone tracker? And the answer is no, you don't. You absolutely don't have to. So the question is, when in the fasting process should I use the Keto Mojo? I'm not familiar with measuring ketones, blood sugar, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, okay, if you have a desire to have more information and learn more, then the Keto Mojo might be right for you. If you're getting results and you don't want to use it or think you don't really need it, and the answer is you're right, you don't. Yep, you can continue doing exactly what you're doing and not having to worry about it.
Yeah, we've even seen some people who were on the right track and then, you know, got it just kind of out of curiosity and then started getting some question marks, some uncertainty points, because there's some unpredictability in what your blood sugar is doing, like minute to minute, what your ketones are doing. You know, each 20-hour fast is not going to look the same on your Keto Mojo. It's going to depend on your level of insulin resistance, what you ate at your last meal. How hydrated are you? Have you exercised today? What time of day is it? The list goes on for the variables. So understanding that if you are going to go down that path, which is, it's a really cool one, but I don't feel like I was ready for a while for like a level of like, you know, what's going on in, you know, within my body, for more data that I could kind of start reconciling and correlating over time with what I was doing. It did get to a point where it was helpful, but I had to be very consistent with it in order to start correlating that for myself. So, just being aware that there can be more uncertainty points, and it can be helpful to avoid those and to kind of insulate yourself from them, especially if you're early on in the process.
Two things there, right? Like, I love that is, you have to stay consistent with it. If you're just going to pick it up and just test willy-nilly, it's going to create more confusion.
Yeah.
So staying consistent, testing every morning is going to give you a good baseline of what your body's doing overnight, what your fasting blood sugar should be in the morning. It'll give you an idea of where you're on the blood sugar disease scale of healthy, pre-diabetes, diabetes, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then the time that really was powerful for me, Tommy, and you had brought this up and I had forgotten about it, was that between like 12 to 2 or 1 to 3 time, especially on the days that I was doing some longer fast, that really gave me some insight into what was happening and why I felt the way I did on certain days and better on others and whatnot. So
early afternoon.
Early afternoon. Right? Yeah. Okay. So staying consistent with those two times for a few weeks, if you are testing or if you haven't really found any traction with it, is a good place to start. And then the second thing that I thought of when you were explaining that was, if you are already doing blood sugar testing, then getting a Keto Mojo that has the ketones portion of it or the GKI portion of it could be a reasonable, like, I don't say upgrade, but a reasonable level up.
because you're already used to doing the blood sugar testing, but now you're just going to get blood sugar plus ketones. And then there's an equation that spits out a really cool metric that gives you some insight into what your body's doing physiologically in terms of disease reversal and energy production.
Yeah.
So again, if you're listening to this going, like the Muppets or the Peanuts, right? Charlie Brown, right? Like, don't worry about it. You don't need to. Just keep doing what you're doing. But knowing that if you do get stuck or you do want some more data, you are more analytical for all the engineers out there. You can absolutely, use this as a tool.
Yeah. Let me say one thing emphatically, which is that
this is going to be good.
You don't need sky high ketones in order to be in fat burning mode. Okay. So if you are going to start measuring this stuff, you don't need to just yearn for the next level of ketones to feel like you're in, you know, a solid state of ketosis and to feel like what you're doing is working. So Keto Mojo has a lot of cool infographs and explainer videos and tutorials and things like that. And so, just starting to tap into the process of just the very beginning entry level nutritional ketosis, especially if you have a high level of insulin resistance or you have a lot of weight to lose, you're on the right track, and that's how it's going to start. And usually those ketone numbers will start to slowly rise over time as the weight comes off and the insulin resistance comes down.
Yep. As you're more easily entering ketosis, it will, those numbers will get higher for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw anything over two for, might have been a year. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've used it consistently. But one last kind of nugget, fasting for life, little bonus drop here I wanted to share was going back to the original, as we wrap up today's episode, Tommy, about the closing your eating window or being concerned about it. I really want to give the optimizer, as we say, the 5-4-3-2-1 rule. And as a tool to be able to do something actionable, if that spoke to you or if that's something you struggle with. So the 5-4-3-2-1 rule is from Mel Robbins. And if you don't know who she is, she's got some incredible videos out there. Powerhouse. One of the most, just powerhouse entrepreneur, life coach. I mean, she's just incredible. So she does a 5-4-3-2-1 rule where it's, you're breaking that pattern interrupt. So if you are about to do something where you're like, oh, here we go, this is my old pattern.
Right. Yeah.
Simply going,
here I am again.
5-4-3-2-1, give yourself a virtual hug and say, it's okay. You've identified the issue. You've pattern interrupt. Set the timer for 10 minutes. Walk away from whatever it was, if it's related to food. Get out of the kitchen. Get out of the pantry. Mm-hmm. Set the timer for 10 minutes and then ask yourself, do I still want to do X behavior?
Yeah.
And the majority of the time, you're going to go, no, I don't. And it's going to remove that pattern or that pattern interrupt or that cue that causes the habit to kind of to pop up, right? We always try to change the action at the end. What we need to do is start with the pattern interrupt or the cue in the beginning. So take a minute, 5-4-3-2-1, set a timer for 10 minutes, walk away from that environment, right? Give yourself a minute to think and then ask yourself the question, is this moving me closer or farther away from my goal? And if you decide that you're okay with it and it's moving you farther away from your goal, that's okay in the beginning. Just be easier on yourself and don't be so hard on yourself, because changing lifestyle habits and adapting a fasting, for instance, lifestyle is simple, but sometimes it's not easy and it's okay.
Yeah. Sometimes you're just one little thing away, like you're one fast away, you're one little trick away from breaking these patterns that aren't serving you so that you can take it to the next level. It's crazy how those little things add up over time. So, I'm going to encourage everyone to take a step back, reflect back, what are you doing well lately, and take stock of that, give yourself a pat on the back and do more of those things. And just find one or two things where you go, that hasn't been serving me so well. I would like to tweak that or change it in some way. Just one or two. Focus on lots of good things that you're doing and just take one or two of the things that you could tweak and go, how could I do this a little bit better? Put a plan in for next time. And then just think about doing that a few times and it's going to come to you a lot more easily in the moment next time it comes up.
you're actually going to take the thinking out of it.
Yeah.
Which is extremely important when it comes to emotional connections to food and our habits. So
good point.
With that, Tommy, I want to encourage everybody, if you're new to the Fasting for Life podcast, thank you for joining us. You can head over to the website, find out more about who we are and what we do. You can download the Fast Start Guide. It's a free Fast Start PDF where you can put one meal a day fasting into your day-to-day life. We've got the insulin assessment up there, and we've got the challenge coming up on January 12th. We're planning out the end of this year, Tommy, as we wrap up. We've got some big things coming in 2022.
Yeah.
And just so thankful for each and every one of you that's been listening. So as we typically say, Tommy, thank you so much for the conversation. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Bye.
So you've heard today's episode and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.